Be seated, please.
If you would, turn to our song of invitation and mark that, please, number 255. Number 255.
Thank you, Adam. Morning, church. Morning. Crowd's kind of sparse this morning. Cold got us. Got a few announcements. I mentioned last week that after class, we were Edward and Brianna were going to have their gender reveal, but we're actually going to do that after worship this morning in between class while we're all in the fellowship hall anyway. So if you weren't here last week, Brianna and Edward, they've kind of saved their gender reveal for today. They don't know what gender it is. They're both in blue, obviously. They think it's a boy. I'm just saying. I know a few others of us. I know me. I think Sister Craig and I guess Don thinks it's a girl too. He's got on pink, or he just chose a pink shirt. But in any case, so after service when we have our donuts and coffee, we'll kind of go in there. And I know is the box already in there, Tiffany? So yeah, I peeked. So I'm kidding. I don't. So we'll make our way in there and really happy for them. And we've been praying for their baby, and so really, really excited about that. We have a new nursery that's ready to go, except that we don't have video in there yet, but it's coming. But the nursery's finished. So starting next week, that nursery's open. So if you have babies or you have visitors with you who have babies, you know, that nursery's there. We all know where it is. If you don't, if you go through the fellowship hall, hang a left, hang a right. If you get confused, ask along the way. But look for it. So it's really pretty. People have done a lot of good work. I am asking, and I never, you know, ask y'all for much except to raise your hand or to say something, but I never ask anybody to spend any money until today. And so I've been in the nursery, and nurseries have, you know, toys in it, and they have everything. They also have books. And when you think about it, children learn from seeing pictures, from having people talk to them. And when they're the youngest is when they learn the stories that we all grew up in. What I'm finding is that this newer generation, you know, we always blame them for everything, but unfortunately, this is our fault, because if the new generation doesn't know the Bible story, that's not their fault. That's our fault. And so what I'd like to see is for us to have some nice new books that go in there. And I'm not saying these books are bad if you put these books in there. We have a ton of books in there on the shelf, but here's what I'd like to see. I would like to see new, colorful Bible books in our nursery. You can buy these for $4.95 on Amazon. If you don't know what Amazon is, see me, and I'll show you. And if you don't have an Amazon Prime account, see me. I have one, and, you know, it's the only thing I have, you know, that I actually make sure I've had for years. So if you would, wherever you shop, or maybe you're in Walmart, and we like these. I know some of us think, if you walked in this morning, you saw, or if you walked in the office side, you see all this drywall that's gone up over the concrete walls. And we've added some changes to the building, and I know some of us, you know, why do we have to add drywall? I want to I told you I wouldn't have you show of hands, but that's just during the sermon. It's pre-sermon, so it doesn't count. How many of you have on bell bottoms this morning? Anybody? Anybody wearing polyester pants? Anybody? How many of you still have green, or let's do this, how many of you still have red shag carpet in your house? Does anybody still have red shag carpet in your house? Anybody? At all? Nobody? I know there are some of us who still have popcorn ceilings in our house. Okay. But for those of us who raise our hands, how many of us wish we didn't have the popcorn ceiling? Okay. We make changes all the time to our dress. None of us wear what we wore 30 or 40 years ago. I'm pretty sure. We outgrew it or it just doesn't look good anymore. There are a lot of things we change. We make updates to our houses all the time. We paint our houses, put new carpet in the houses, buy new furniture for the houses. It's just what we do. We want that to look nice. And when it comes to the church, we have this tendency to say, well, why are we doing that? You do it all the time, and so do I. We do it to our homes. We do it to our dress. We don't want to put our kids in 3 years ago clothing. We update them all the time. I don't drive a 1978 station wagon, even though that's what I grew up in, with the red carpet in the station wagon. I don't want to own that car. I don't like that car. I don't want to be caught dead in that car. If you have one of those, I'm sorry. I just don't want to drive your car. That's what I grew up in. We do this all the time, folks. And so when it comes to the church, I'm going to tell y'all, impressions matter. And y'all know this. And I'm not getting on to anybody. I'm just kind of letting everybody know where we are here. Impressions matter. And what we like to do is sometimes we have to freshen things up. Sometimes we have to change things. Sometimes we haven't paid attention to something in 30 years, and we got to pay attention to it. And this is kind of part of it, too. I'd like for, if you're at Kmart or you're at Walmart or if you're on Amazon or if you're in Barnes & Noble. Do we have Barnes & Noble anymore? Do they still exist? I thought they went out with Blockbuster. If you're in any of those and you see a nice kids, like, board book and it's got pictures, and I'd like to have, I mean, these are fine, but I'd like for us, if we can, there's plenty of Bible books out there and not Elmo. That would be, if you want to buy Elmo, I guess that'd be fine. But I'd rather have an opportunity to have some kind of story. This one right here is Daniel in the Lion's Den, which is fine, except it was made in, I think, 1892. Oh, it doesn't even have any pages, so it doesn't even count. You see what I'm saying? You see what I'm saying? This is what I'm talking about. So, and all it is just us paying attention. We just got to pay attention. You know, why is this in here? We got to pay attention to this kind of stuff. And so, it's, I think it says 1983, but that might be when somebody sold it. In any case, I hope y'all understand what I'm trying to get you to do. If you have an opportunity to get that book, take it into the nursery, and when you drop it off, you can take one of those old ones out and just swap it out. And when you walk into the nursery on the left, it's just everything looks new in there, and you look over, and there's the books. So it's like 2018, 1893. And so if you bring a book, drop it in. Don't throw it away. Just bring it to my office, and you can give it to me or put it on my desk or whatever you want to do, but it just kind of lets us know, all right, we got one swapped out. So if we can get 20 or 30 really nice books, that'd be great. If you really like it but you don't have the money, see me. I know there's some people who've already given us a little money to buy. Somebody gave me a check to buy some new books. So if you found a book but you don't have the money, that's fine. Just see me, and we'll do that. I hope that's all the announcements we have. Do we have a, is this ready to go? All right. Last week, we put these up here because they don't have any pages anyway. Last week, we talked about balance, talked about where, on the one hand, we have to be this, but on the other hand, we have to be this. And if y'all remember, we had the same text that we read last week. So if you have your Bibles, if you go to the book of 1 Peter, or if you have a phone or something like that, that you can look at it. 1 Peter chapter 2, that's where we're going to be. You know, like 5 or 6 years ago, I think, we were having VBS at the last church I was at, and the theme was, I think, the Exodus or something. And every child that came in was assigned a tribe. So you came in, you were the tribe of Issachar, and you had like an orange bandana that you wore. And then somebody else came in, and you were the tribe of Simeon. So you had, you know, orange, you know, a blue bandana, and then Judah, and you kind of get the point, I hope. So all these kids coming in. Well, we had a lot of kids one night, and just kind of an overflow, and we had these two extra kids show up right when the registration was ending, and we ran out of bandanas. So every child's got a tribe, but we got these last two. Sister Alita Short was here for Ladies' Day. I know a lot of you got to meet her. If you haven't met Alita, then you weren't here. She's hard not to meet. But she's loud, she's boisterous, she likes to have her way, she usually gets her way, so she kind of takes over whenever she's in the room. And she was there, and she was leading the singing, you know, with all the kids, and she came out right when the registration was happening, and these two children were there, and we were registering them, but we don't have any bandanas. And so the ladies at the registration table didn't know what to do, and Alita came out, and she said, "Why do we have no bandanas?" She said, "Where's the preacher?" And that's how I got involved in this story. You know, I'm down the hall getting coffee, trying to stay away from all this, and I hear, "Where's the preacher?" And then I hear her coming, and she's singing some tune, and it's not good. You know, it's got the preacher's name in it and what she's going to do to me, because it's my fault, obviously, that we don't have any bandanas, even though I had nothing to do with VBS, all right? So she's coming down the hall, and she says, "Adam," and I kind of peeked my head around, and I said, "Yes, ma'am." She said, "We got no bandanas for the extra kids that have shown up." And I said, "What do you want me to do about it?" She said, "I want you to get some bandanas." I said, "Where am I going to go to get that?" She said, "I don't know. You got to go to Kroger. You got to go." She said, "These children cannot be tribeless. They've got to be included. We're not going to have kids be here and not be a part of the tribe." I said, "That's fine, but I don't know how to fix it. I just can't produce bandanas." She said, "You know what? That's fine." So she went back. Now I'm following her because I know what that's fine. I don't know what that means, so I got to go make sure I see what that means. So she goes back up to where those two kids were, and she says, "You two, you're with me." She said, "Tonight, we're all exiles." So she made up some new bandana. She had some extra clothes and made it up. And she put it around her head, and she put it around their head. And she said, "We're the exiled children of Israel." And she somehow incorporated that into the whole thing. So you got all these tribes, and you got the exiled ones. Now, I don't know if, you know, that was the best way to handle it. I thought it was a pretty good idea. But Aletha was concerned about children who felt like they weren't part of the group. And I know for a lot of us who have kids, that's kind of the concern, is that a lot of times there are kids who don't feel like they're a part of, or they don't have what others have. This doesn't stop with childhood. Y'all all know as well as I do, we keep this into adulthood. We want to feel like we're a part of the family. We want to feel like we're a part of the group. And when Peter starts this letter, he starts using metaphors to talk to him. You remember last week he talked about we're this big building. And another spot, he calls them priests. And here, I don't know if you noticed it when Jaheim read it, he uses another word, 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 11. He says, "Dear friends, I urge you as foreigners and exiles to abstain from sinful desires which wage war against your soul." Immigrants. It's a good way to translate that. Immigrants. He says, "Dear children, I know you're immigrants. You know what it's like to be an immigrant. You know what it's like to be a foreigner. If you are here in America today and you weren't born here, you migrated here, if you're an immigrant, or if you know someone who is, they would have a really, really good appreciation for 1 Peter. Because they would know what it's like to be in a place that's really not your home. And if you know the story of Israel, you know that they know what it's like to live in a place that's not their home. And when Peter writes this letter, you've got all of these places that he's writing to. And you've got all these people who are Christians, but they're living in a spot that they really don't know anything about. And so they're kind of being a citizen of two countries. If you've ever moved somewhere just out of the blue, if you've ever been in the military, you had to pick up after 2.5 years and just move. If any of you have ever moved at all, you understand what it's like to move to a new place and know no one, to have nothing, and to have to start all over again. And Peter says, I know what this is like. A lot of you are immigrants. A lot of you are foreigners. A lot of you are exiles. But here's what he wants to do. He wants to use that to teach all of us what it's like to be a Christian. You know what it's like to be a Christian? When you live in this country and have to be a Christian in America. And I know that most of us say that we live in a Christian country and we have Christian principles and Christian ideals. You should read more papers of the founders and what they said. For a lot of us, being an American is synonymous with being a Christian. And it's just not true. Christians are those who are Christians first who have to find a way to live in a foreign land. And America a lot of times ends up being a foreign land. We have to find a way to live here and be a Christian and yet still be a citizen of the United States. In Philippians chapter 3, verse 20, Paul says, our citizenship is in heaven. We eagerly await a Savior from there, the Lord Jesus Christ, who, by the power that enables him to bring everything under his control, will transform our lowly bodies so that they will be like his glorious bodies. We sing, this world is not my home. And it's not. I mean, really, it's not. All of us who are here in this room are people who live in a foreign land. We're all exiles. We're all foreigners. We're all immigrants. We don't belong to this earth. Our home is somewhere else. So how do you learn to live in a place that doesn't speak your language? How do you learn to live in a place that doesn't do things the way you've always done them? And how do you learn to live in a place that at the end of the day will cut your legs out from underneath you? And if you haven't been a Christian long, you would still probably understand and start to see that the world doesn't have a whole lot of time for very serious, faithful people. For those of you who don't lie, for those of you who don't steal, who don't want to get ahead, you're not going to last long in this earth. You're not going to get that much ahead if you're not willing to cut some corners and to cheat and to lie. That's just how the world operates. God calls us to be citizens in a land that's not our home. And that's tough. Before we ever moved to Maryland, like 2006, I was in the construction business, and we were trying to put this bid together to get this big job. I was working with two contractors, and we had this, I mean, we had a huge bid. We had to get it in, and we were $10,000. I knew what the bid needed to be, and I knew we were $10,000 over what it needed to be. And we discussed it. I couldn't figure out how to do it. I could cut $10,000, but my profit was like $11,000, so I can't be on this job for a whole year and only make $1,000. I couldn't do it. So we were trying to figure out how to cut the price. And we got the bid together, and then we came for the opening, and I knew we weren't going to get this job because we were $10,000 over. And so when we came, the guy who's over all the bids, he came, and I said, "Why are we here? Because we're not going to make it." And he said, "Nope, I adjusted it last night." Now, for those of you who don't know how money works, that's hard to do. I said, "What do you mean you adjusted it last night? What is that? How do you adjust? This isn't Monopoly. You know, how do you adjust $10,000? He said, "I took it out of labor." Y'all know what he means when he says that? I said, "What do you mean you took it out of labor?" He said, "I took it out of the labor. They'll never know." I said, "I will tell you right now, I would know if you took $10,000 from me." He said, "Well, if we spread it out, they'll never know." I said, "Well, if you spread it out over me, I still know that I'm going to make less money than what I told you I needed to make. Did you ask them if you could do it?" And he said, "No," and I quote, "They're just Mexicans." I don't like pulling, I like to hold back in here. But to be honest, you can take the word Mexicans out and put another name, right? They're just fill in the blank. They're just women. They're just elderly. They're just children. They're just, you know what I'm saying. And for those of you who've ever had to put your name in the blank, you understand exactly what Peter's saying, don't you? That we all, as a Christian, have to learn how to live in a place that will do anything they can to get ahead. And the question is not, what are you going to do about it? The question is, how are you going to respond to that? What's the real question if you have to be a Christian in a world that has no time for you? And if you think, "Well, yeah, but I'm a Christian, I never feel any pressure." If you're a Christian in the United States and you don't feel any pressure, you're not a very good Christian. Seriously, I mean, you feel no pressure because nobody knows you are. But if you are, you won't be. There are people, I'm not going to go that way. Look at verse 12. "Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they might see your good deeds. They may glorify God on the day he visits us. Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human authority, whether to the emperor as a supreme authority or to governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and to commend those who do right. It is God's will that by doing good you will silence ignorant talk of fools. Live as free people, but don't use your freedom as a cover-up for evil. Live as God's slaves. Show proper respect to everyone. Love the family of believers. Fear God. Honor the king." Church, verse 17 should be on all of our refrigerators. Well, some of you still don't have magnets. "Show respect to everyone. Love the family of believers. Fear God. Honor the king." Even if it's Trump. Even if it's Obama. Honor the king. It's one thing not to like who we have or not to respect who we have and voice our opinion. It's another thing entirely not to like who we have and still honor them anyway. God calls us to a higher calling. On the one hand, we're all resident aliens here. This world is not my home. We're fine with singing that song. This world is not my home. I'm just passing through. But we need to act like we come from a better place. Remember, I told you this about balance. Peter doesn't just say we're immigrants. Peter says we have to be servants. And we got to learn how to balance the two. We have to learn how to be an immigrant in a place that we don't know how to act. And we also have to learn how to honor the king, even though he's not my king. Every election, I see those same signs. Not my president. I saw it in 2008. I saw it in 2004. I mean, this ain't new. It's not new. I saw it with George W. Bush. I saw it with President Obama. And I saw it with President Trump. Not my president. And to be honest with you, is he our king? No. But is he our king? Well, yes. You see the balance? He's not, but he is. Which one? Yes. You like how that worked out? Yes. Somehow we have to balance that. We can't go too far this way, and you can't go too far this way. Peter's about learning how to balance both. How do we learn how to be a foreigner, yet how to serve those who are not really my king? I have to treat them as if they are. And I will tell you from experience, that is a hard, hard thing to do. And it's one thing for me to talk about politics. It's one thing for me to use names like Trump and Obama and Bush. It's another thing entirely when it gets personal. When I was in the construction business, right around the same time we took that $10,000 cut, I had made a new friend who had come to me from Ecuador. And he'd become one of my best friends. And he taught me a lot about Spanish language, taught me a lot about Spanish culture. And he worked for me, and we saw each other probably 10 hours a day. We stopped for lunch one day at a meet and three in Wilson County. It's just, you know, it's one of those nice, probably one of my favorite meet and threes at the time. And we stopped, and I remember what I got. I got meatloaf, and I only got two vegetables because I didn't like all, I can't eat three. That's just a lot, that's too many vegetables for me for lunch. But I got meatloaf, and I got potatoes, and I got green beans. And I'm standing in line. It was $6. That's how good this is. Like, this is a good restaurant if you can get that for $6. And I got a drink, by the way. So this is good stuff. It was $6 and tax. You know, it doesn't get any better. Now, this place isn't there anymore, so maybe they should have charged more tax. I don't know. But they said $6, and I got it, and I'm going to get my drink, and the man's name is Santiago. And he said, he called me Papo. I don't know what that means, but that's just what he called me. The others called me other names, but he just called me Papo. He said, Papo, what do you got? And I said, it's meatloaf, it's green beans, it's mashed potatoes. He said, is that good? I said, yeah, it's good. He said, I'm going to get the same thing. And so he got the same thing, and he gets his, and we both got ours. And he sets his down, and we both got a drink. And he said, man, he said, we get all this food for $7. And I said, $6. And he said, $7. I said, no, it was just $6. They overcharged you. And he said, we got the same thing. And I said, let me see your receipt. Of course, the receipts aren't, you know, it's a meet and three and a hole in the wall. It's not going to be, you know, it's not done in QuickBooks or anything. You know, it just says $7. And I looked at it, looked at mine, $6, $7. Same food. I said, no, this doesn't work for me. He said, Papa, what's wrong? I said, no, we're going to fix this. So we go up there, and I kind of knew the guy. I'd seen him a while, and I said, hey, you charged my guy $1 more than you charged me. And he said, yeah. And I said, but he got the same thing I got. And he said, yeah. And I said, so what happened? He said, taxes. And I said, well, you didn't charge me taxes. He said, no, it was sales taxes on both of yours. That's just another tax. What kind of tax is that? He said, call it an illegal tax. It's one thing for me to stand up here and talk to you all about Trump and Obama. That's another thing entirely for me to just tell you really how this works. I went back to the table. I looked at Santiago. I said, let's go. And he's at this, I mean, this kid could work. Anything I can do, he can do times three. He's a quick worker. He was a good worker. And he just, you know, he embarrassed any other worker I had. He's that good. And he was just a good guy. I said, let's go. Got his mouth full of food. He said, Papa, where are we going? I said, we're leaving. And he said, but I'm hungry. I said, well, I'm not eating it. He said, can I have yours? And I said, yeah, man, eat mine. I said, I'm not eating it. And so I sat there fuming, arms crossed, angry. And he's just eating away, talking about, you know, he was trying to learn some new pachata move, you know, and he's, you know, talking and feeling his face, and I'm so angry about this. And I'm really not listening, and he gets done, he's licking his fingers, and he wipes his with the napkins, and he says, "All right, let's go." He said, "If you're going to ruin my mood." I said, "Let's go." And we got up, and I said, "Leave the trash. Make them pick it up." And he said, "Oh, no, 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 I can't do that." And I said, "Man, leave it." And I'm heading out the door, and he's picking up the trash and picking up the baskets and throwing it all away. And then he goes up to the counter, and he says, "Sir," it's the guy who charged him a dollar, remember, for the illegal tax. He says, "Sir, do you have a napkin I could use to wipe off the table?" The guy said, "No." So Santiago went to the bathroom, and he got paper towels, and he put water on it. He came back, and he wiped the table down, and he got more paper towels. By this time, I have migrated to the car because I'm just fuming. I got, you know, flames coming out of my ears. And I watch him in there, you know, doing this and throwing it away and then waving to the guy and then coming out in the car and buckled his seatbelt. I was in the driver's side. He was in the passenger. When he got in and buckled his seatbelt, he said, "Buckle up, Papo." At this point, I don't want to do anything anybody tells me. I said, "I'm not buckling up. You know, I've resorted to being 2 years old." You know. But have you ever resorted to being 2 or 3 years old? All the time. And I will tell you, my worst moments are when I cannot make the world behave. I said, "I'm never coming back here." He said, "That's a great line." He said, "Papo, you cannot change people. You can only help people." He said, maybe one day he'll see Mexicans are not bad. I said, "You're not Mexican. You're Ecuadorian." He said, okay. "Maybe he'll see all brown people aren't bad." He said, "Maybe, Papo, if I show him, maybe if I could be the best customer he's ever seen, he'll stop taxing me and start taxing you." He said, "Maybe he'll call it a gringo tax." You know, maybe people can change, maybe. But they're only going to change if we do what my friend did, not what I did. If we all act how I acted, we're not going to change anybody. We just get mad and act like we're 2 years old. Throw a fit. And all that does is play into the anger and the hatred and the shame that is our culture. The only way to do this is to fight fire with just love. Or as Peter says, live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. How about I read these next three verses one more time? Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human authority, whether to the emperor as the supreme authority or to the governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and commend those who do right. It is God's will that by doing good you should silence the ignorant talk of fools. Peter did not invent this. Paul did not invent this. They got it all from Jesus. In the book of John, you remember this, when Jesus talks to his disciples about being in the world, but not of the world. We're all residents of America, but we can't act like Americans. We have to act like Christians. Paul wrote in Philippians that though Jesus was in every way God, he did not consider that something to be greedily held on to. Instead, he decided to be an immigrant and to migrate his way to earth. And you know what he did when he got here? He washed feet, he waited tables, and he died. Somehow Jesus became a servant. And church, I will tell you, he expects no less from us. In the Sermon on the Mount, one of his most famous pieces, Jesus says, if somebody slaps you on the right cheek, well, turn the other. If somebody wants to sue you and take your shirt, give them your coat too. Somebody forces you to go 1 mile, go 2. Give to the one who asks, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. You've heard, love your neighbor, hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies. and pray for those who persecute you. Be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. It's balance. It's not only understanding that we all have to grow, it's also understanding we got to grow together. It's not only understanding that this world is not our home, it's also understanding that we have to serve those who don't understand that. And for too long, we've allowed anger and hatred and politics to get in the way. Church, we have a higher calling. We have to do better. We have to show the world where we're from. When we went up north, we would talk and they would say, "Where are y'all from? You know, your twang comes out." And I got so tired of it, I just started really grinding on it. I mean, I would try to sound as southern as I possibly can, just because I knew it irritated them. I mean, I'm serious. Like, I would just start to push on it. And even when I sang, I would, you know, elongate, even the word sang, you know, even when I sang, you know, I mean, I was, you know, it's even the one syllable words became two syllables. You know, somebody always said, they would say, "Malanta." And that's what she said in the church. And so I kind of grafted that, and I made it that word into like eight syllables. You know, "Oh, Malanta." You know, just because I knew it just kind of irked him a little bit. But I got to thinking, what if we could all lean on the traits that make us who we are? Not just our accents. Lean on our heavenly qualities. Those qualities that show the world who we are, press those. Honor and integrity. That we work hard. That we're kind and we're gracious, even to those who want nothing to do with us. Be a servant, not a show-off. Be gracious, not angry. Have balance in this world. The day before we left to go to Maryland, me and Santiago went out one more time. He was finishing on the job, and I was, you know, anytime I had to go work with him, you know, by 12 o'clock, I got to eat. And he was driving. He said, "You know, let's go. I'm driving." And where do we go to eat? And I'm on the phone not paying attention, as is normal for me in this case. And we pull up, and I look up, and I said, "Man, I ain't eating here. I'm telling you right now, I'm not eating here. I'll walk to somewhere else. If you want to go, you're gluttony for punishment, you just go on ahead, but I ain't doing it." He said, "Papa, come on, I got this." I said, I'm not doing it. And he got out of the car, and the owner, who said the stuff last time, comes out the front door, and he says, "Santiago! Buenos dias." And Santiago looks at me, and he winks. And we walk in, the guy goes, "You want your usual?" I said, "Si." He said, "Let me introduce you to my boss. He's the best man I know." And I, no lie, I went. He said, "This is my friend Adam." And he said, "And this is," told me his name. He said, "He's another good man." And the guy shook my hand, and he said, "This is one of the best guys I've ever met." And so we ate, and I really expected me to pay more money. There were no taxes that day. There were no made-up, make-believe taxes. My friend, with compassion and kindness, crushed prejudice. Crushed it. It didn't even exist anymore. In that one hole in the wall of the world, he crushed it. He was an immigrant, yet he was a servant. He learned how to balance it. Church, this morning the call, as always, is to baptism. It is to give up your life and to become a citizen of the kingdom of heaven. But the invitation is also to live a balanced life and to change the world one hole at a time. Won't you come as together we stand?